Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Leader in Motion Radio. I'm your host, Christine LePerrier. Tonight I'm excited for this conversation. Have you ever wondered what the value of corporate values really are? Does your company have them? Do they actually live by them? Do you think that corporate values actually change the result of an organization? And do you think they actually help a culture function a little more succinctly? I've wondered and pondered these questions myself, and after a great conversation with my friend and colleague Jason Spraga about this topic, I knew he'd be the right guy to bring in to talk to us about it. Jason founded Spraga Capital in 2001 to provide the Main Street entrepreneur with professional, service-first, transactional, and capital advice. The foundation for this vision stems from multiple generations of family business operations and is supported by a chartered accountant designation with work focused primarily on owner-managed enterprise. Jason has a lot of specific expertise in raising capital and succession planning, sale of privately owned businesses, and management buyouts. So he's the founder of and former managing director of TL Corporate Finance and has held positions with PwC and DBO Dunwoody. Jason, are you there?
I am here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on tonight and talking to us a little bit more about values, because I think our conversation about this was so interesting. I think before we get started, I just have to ask you to tell us a little bit more about how you started Spraga Capital.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. So, as you indicated in my background, I'm a chartered accountant, and in articling through the sort of early part of the 90s, I was involved in a number of transactions in a due diligence supporting role for mergers and acquisitions and corporate finance transactions through the accounting firms. And I got a really, a good sense of what that was all about and really thought that was a great fit for me. I don't think your typical chartered accountant in that, the jokes on the bean counters aside, I like the art of the deal, negotiation. I spent a lot of time researching that side, and I just found a real good fit for myself. And I went out and I created a relationship with an accounting firm. That's what led to the formation of TL Corporate Finance, and I set that up from scratch and ran that for the late 90s, and then in 2001 rolled out my team and set up Spraga Capital in 2001. And the foundation for that was this very large gap in the advisory services and the support for entrepreneurs and trying to help them figure out how they were going to deal with their ownership. And we've really prided ourselves in exclusively working with owner managers and entrepreneurs, quirkiness and odd personalities and all the great things that come with that, and how they've rolled up their sleeves, usually from scratch, or taken on multiple generation businesses to build them. And we just felt that there was this huge gap in the marketplace in terms of helping them decide, do I grow my company? If so, how do I do that? Do I raise capital? Do I make acquisitions? How do I go about doing that? Or should I get some liquidity? Should I sell outright? Am I in trouble with my financial institution? I need to refinance my business. All these things that face entrepreneurs throughout their business life cycle. And really looking around the marketplace, there was nobody that was providing these services in a comprehensive, independent, and meaningful way to that marketplace. So we set up our firm to fill that void in 2001, and we've had success throughout the years in serving that market.
Now, for those that don't understand this industry that well, what makes the way that your company helps customers unique?
Well, I think it's a couple of fair question. I think it's a couple of points I would make on that. Firstly, I would say that, as we discovered that there was this gap in the marketplace, I think originally when we went at it, we found that there was just a void of service providers in our segment. as you said, for those who don't sort of understand, there for generations and for years, it's of course been Bay Street and Wall Street firms that have been providing mergers and acquisitions of corporate finance services globally. But really, if you are a $10, $15, $20, $50 million company, historically, before the 2000s, where would you go? Where would those advisory services come from? They'd usually come from an eclectic mix of friends, maybe your lawyer. Sometimes it's somebody, an executive that you knew that was no longer working and was doing consulting work and would partner up with you to help you through that. Your accounting firm would try to help you around the fringes, but they really didn't have the expertise in-house. And so there was a number of different sole practitioners and different individuals getting into the space, and we decided to make a firm of it. And over the years, there's other parties that have come into that play, other independents that have come together, people that have left accounting firms to set up their own firm. But, we were sort of in our area, in our jurisdiction, which is Ontario and Southern Ontario in particular, we're sort of the first to strike out in the independent, in what we call the Main Street model. So, understanding that the fees that we were going to charge had to be commensurate with the size of the cash flows that these businesses had, that we were prepared to structure our arrangements with our clients so that they could manage them within the context of their business. And I think most importantly, everybody within our business is an entrepreneur of themselves, in and of themselves. They've either ran or built or been part of a family or a private business in some fashion throughout their life. And so they've lived, eat, and breathe that themselves.
Now, what I find interesting when you and I were talking about this earlier was that when you started Spire Capital, one of the things that you did was you created values for the company at the onset. Why did you see that as important?
Well, I think it goes to everything I was just saying, which is, you're sort of blue sky coming out into the market and saying there's a void here. And you need to sort of differentiate yourself in the sense that the other people that are participating in the market, historically, it's no secret that investment bankers, advisors, mergers and acquisitions consultants, or in quote deal makers, have been seen as people with less than stellar value sets. They tend to sort of jump around and go from deal to deal and go to the hot spots and get what they can out of that deal and then move on. And there's not a lot of thought to building a brand or a reputation over the long term. We saw ourselves as young guys who were trying to set up the foundations of a long-standing business that we'd hope would be around for 20, 30, 40, 50 years or more. And we had youth and strategy on our side. And what we said was, if we're going to do this, we really have to lay out, what are the rules that we're going to govern ourselves by so that we make sure that when we're out there talking to people, telling them, here's what makes us different, we're actually living by them. So we actually hired, right out of the gate, we hired an individual. His name's Sammy. And Sammy was a strategy consultant who specialized in helping young firms design their values. And this is such a unique concept in our sector because, again, the last place you'd expect to see the topic of corporate values and trying to integrate those kinds of values into the operation would be an investment bank advisory firm like Spire Capital at its roots. But again, it's all about differentiation. And so we went through a process. It took us probably 4 or 5 months in total from beginning to end of just discovery about, the industry, who we were, what we wanted to do, where we wanted to go in the short and medium term, and how we wanted to govern ourselves. And then as we designed our values, and it's come down to 3 basic value principles that we always try to, operate and live by without exception, we have to test those to make sure, okay, well, when we get into the real world, are we going to be able to live by those in actual fact? And so, we spent a lot of time designing them, and we feel that we've come up with a set that, over 10 years plus now, we've been able to live by and look back on and reflect on and still confidently say that we made the right choice in setting those principles out out of the gate.
That's interesting. And when you were going through that design process, I'm just curious, were there any aha moments for you as you were actually trying to unearth what those values were going to be?
Well, I don't know if this is an aha moment as much, you know, trying to give a sense of what, you know, what you're up against when you're trying to design these core principles. When you try to design these core value principles, you need to test them. And so some of those aha moments are, you know, what if scenarios. So what if we end up in this kind of scenario, what would our reaction be, and are you going to be able to live by them? And, you know, example would be, so what I should set out is, you know, our three value principles that we have are integrity, excellence, and beyond business. And quite simply, what those three mean are integrity, to do what's right in the circumstance for our client each and every time, despite the consequences to yourself, doing morally and ethically what is right. That requires a judgment, a professional judgment. And, yeah, it's one of those things that you don't know what morals and ethics are. Like, you can't nail down the definition, but you know right from wrong when you see it or hear it. And just to be able to make those judgments along the way, and that has implications in terms of the people that are within your organization and how you go about making those decisions. Secondly, when it comes to excellence, it's making sure that, you know, we value the needs of all the stakeholders around us to perform, you know, by exceeding their expectations and performing at a certain level. So that can mean anything from before information goes out the door that we're producing, you know, you're valuing your client by making sure that that is produced at a certain expected level given the professional firm that you're operating. But it also can lead to, you know, how you conduct yourself with respect to your suppliers, with respect to your employees, and making sure that you're meeting and exceeding their expectations from an excellent standpoint. And then finally, the beyond business part is, and this is probably the biggest differentiating factor from a lot of the competitive set that we deal with, you know, there is a life beyond the walls of our office, and we need to understand that all our stakeholders, in particular our employees, are respected at that level. So, you know, if somebody says, you know, my daughter's convocation is occurring at 4 o'clock on Thursday afternoon, there's not even a question. I mean, that's something you need to be there. Or my mother's, you know, they're having a retirement party for my mother, or whatever it might be, something that has to do with family, and that can be a good or a bad event that needs to be dealt with or attended to. Those things come first, and we don't expect, nor do we place the kind of time pressure on our people that you would see at a Bay Street or Main Street firm, where people are expected to come in at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning and stay until 1 o'clock the next morning, and, you know, they're just ground in the smithereens, and it's sort of a survival of the fittest, eat what you kill mentality. And again, all of these things, if you set them out, have implications, because if you think about the beyond business concept, that implies that you're probably going to get less hours out of individual employees, so that goes to scale. However, you know, the quality of the time that you get out of your people and the level of their participation and their drive and desire to see the success of the business as a whole, you know, goes up exponentially, and we've certainly realized that. So we get more out of less in terms of volume. Secondly, if you think about the integrity, you're doing what's right in each and every circumstance, despite the consequences to yourself, well, that's a pretty tough bar to live up to, because in our business, you are put up against that test on a daily, if not hourly, basis, given the fact that we're in the deal space. So you're in deep and tough negotiations, and there's people on the other side that are part of your industry and part of your world, and you have to be firm but fair and know where the line is, because, you know, again, you've got numerous stakeholders, but at the end of the day, what's morally and ethically right is you've got a fiduciary obligation to negotiate the best deal possible for your client. It may make more monetary sense for you to just get a deal done and get it across the line, so you can see that deal being closed, but that may not be what's in the best interest of your client, so you're constantly being measured against that. And then anecdotally, you end up in other circumstances on the other side, where let's say you might have a problematic client. Now, not every client, as you know, Christine, is, you know, ends up carrying the same level of integrity as you might. And
right.
So if you end up in a spot where you know under contract and law and from an ethical standpoint, you're due a certain fee and you've done all the things you're supposed to, but there's maybe a loophole that you didn't foresee within your engagement agreement. So technically that client can try to circumvent it to not pay you in full. You know, how far do you go to collect? You know, where is that line given, you know, that value, given that value principle of doing what's morally and ethically right? You know, does that imply you should never, you know, seek to collect beyond, you know, normal means, including collection services or legal means? And how do you govern yourself through those processes? So those are the kinds of things that you've got to consider as you're setting up your value principles. But, you know, we found each and every time that if you go really to the baseline of what those value principles mean and you really do live by them, in the long run you're not going to go wrong because they're right and they're consistent, and that's what people look for in the long run. They look for being, you know, on the right side of the line on a consistent basis over a long period of time.
I think that's interesting because definitely when you're in business, especially in small business world, you run into those challenges where, you know, when do you actually take action and when do you kind of commit to the fact that, you know, maybe this is how it should be, or should you really follow through with some kind of action? Because following some principles around integrity, I could see that being sometimes a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've got a great example around this.
Yeah, so I've got a great anecdotal story around, you know, in a twisted way around doing what's right, the integrity side. We had a client that we were representing to sell their business, and the first thing that client said to us as we were getting into the engagement was, no matter what I do, don't let me change my mind.
Interesting.
Right? And we said, what do you mean by that? And he said, there's going to be moments through this process where I'm going to have second thoughts. I'm not going to be sure about what we're doing. I'm going to be difficult to work with. But don't let me change my mind no matter what you do, even if I say bad things. And
right.
We said, okay. You know, we hadn't had that sort of come up before. And so, and he was absolutely right. So we get, you know, down the line, we go through the process of marketing the business for sale. We have a, you know, full stop, a great buyer who's prepared to pay full price in cash at closing. Due diligence was reasonable. The process was reasonable, and we're sort of getting to the 10th or 11th hour of the process, and all of a sudden you start to feel the creep of second thoughts and cold feet leading up to situations where, you know, our client was supposed to be at critical key meetings with, you know, management on both sides and or to sign documents and just would vaporize for weeks. And we couldn't find him, and then eventually we track him down and he'd say sorry, and we'd continue forward, and then 3 weeks later it would happen again. And this went on for a good 3 or 4 months. And then at one point, we were finally at the 11th hour, 59th minute, and we were supposed to meet downtown Toronto to sign off all the paperwork. And we're at the office, the lawyer's office, waiting for him to arrive. The purchaser was there. Banking was all lined up, money was ready to be transferred, and I got a text from his wife that he had decided last minute to go to the Dominican on a holiday. Right?
Wow.
Yeah. So I had a dilemma. What do I do? Do I tell everybody, you know, everything's off, the deal's off? I remembered regularly, no matter what I do, make sure I go through with it. Don't let me off the mat, so to speak. And he was right. It was the right thing to do. His industry was rapidly consolidating. This was the right thing to do. Within a year or two, the business probably would have started to take a negative slide. It was the right time, right price, right buyer, all of those things. And so it was absolutely the right thing to do for everybody around him, his family, his kids, his wife. But he had vaporized. So what I ended up doing was tracking him down and sort of talking him off the ledge in Dominican and getting him back for the next morning to sign up the paperwork. And it was a huge fight. I mean, we got into a full-out yelling and screaming match about this. At the end of the day, that individual will tell. So we don't talk anymore. I don't talk with this person anymore because he can't emotionally handle talking to me. But I use him as a reference all the time, and he's happy to have me as a use him as a reference. And I always tell people, I'm going to give you this person's name as a reference. He's going to tell you that we haven't spoken in 5 years and he doesn't want to talk to me, but he'd have no issue whatsoever recommending our services.
And, why
and there's a lot of detail in.
Just because of the nature of that conversation?
The nature of the conversation, how heated it got, the emotional implications of everything that happened. Because a lot of the clients that we deal with, in particular as it relates to the divestiture of their baby over the life of their of their ownership, they're more attached to their business often than they are their own family members. And it defines them and who they are. And so, again, this goes back to corporate values and saying, you know, why is it important for a firm like us to have corporate values? It would be less important, likely, in the whole scheme of things, if all we dealt with were managers of large corporate enterprise that weren't personally attached to those organizations. But because
right.
of the nature of our client base and the people we deal with, we have to be able to live by, not only in words, but real-life examples, the integrity, the excellence, and, you know, meaning it and acting beyond business to have more than just, you know, our grind of our business operations to deal with. So
that's an interesting story, and I can see where this has got to feel like giving your child up for adoption for most business owners.
Very, very much so. And this discussion around our values comes up very early and very often in our sales cycle, for lack of a better term, as we are introduced to people who are considering going through these processes and trying to get closer to those individuals, because it becomes a very personal exercise, and those individuals have to feel like they can trust you.
Right. If you didn't have these in place, you know, besides the fact that they're a unique differentiator in your market, but internally as you're working with your colleagues, if you didn't have these in place, how would things look differently?
You know, so you'd like to think that even if you haven't stated these things, you'd live by them. But the reality is that you're not just dealing with your own self. You're dealing with, you know, scaling a firm. Again, a lot of people in our space, they're lone wolves, and you know, they don't. If they've stated these value principles, they've probably just stated them for more of a marketing purpose. They haven't really, you know, said, I've got to build a firm around these core values. For us, it was about going to be more than just, you know, myself or, you know, Eric, who's my partner, or other people who come into ownership. This is going to be about the employees and other stakeholders as we build this firm, again, over a long period of time. And, you know, we're now over 10 people in the advisory practice part of our firm, and we've got another 7 people who are in the merchant banking part of our business, which I can talk about a little bit further if you'd like. And for me, I think the difference would be if we didn't have these core principles to reflect back towards, it would be hard to have people sort of within our firm rally around a core set of understandings. There's been many cases where I said, well, we've got a situation that's arisen and we've got to decide how to act and how to react in a particular situation. And I said, well, you know, again, what's our value principle here? What are we supposed to be living by, and let's make sure that we're testing ourselves to that. And you hope to get to the point where they just become ingrained and you don't have to actually take the time to step back, but from time to time you do. because there are some tough situations that come up where you say, well, should I press on this? You know, how far should I go on this matter? If a client comes back and says, you know, I don't think that that document was up to snuff. What's the appropriate reaction?
Right.
I'm offended. I think it was done properly. Or is it, you know, we've committed to our clients in writing that our value principle for everybody to see is making sure that we live up to this, you know, exceeding expectations, not meeting expectations. So if a client is saying, I don't think that's up to snuff, that means we haven't lived by that and we need to get on the right side of that value principle. So those are the kinds of things that I think having those value principles in place have allowed us to live by those. And I don't think that we would be able to raise our game as far as we have without those in place.
Right, to keep bringing the direction back front and center again when you're in the middle of those really complex decisions and issues.
Yeah, and I think they become fundamentally who you are. You know, no matter how much technology comes into play, no matter how advanced the world gets around you, no matter how the dynamics change within your industry, at the end of the day, you know, integrity, excellence, and your life outside the business are always critically important, you know, fundamental principles.
Right.
They don't change because technology changes.
That's great. Before we wrap up, do you have anything else that you think would be really interesting for people to know about your experience of this?
With respect to the value principle concept?
Yes, and how it impacts your business and your experience as a professional.
If I take a step back from it all and say, you know, why bother doing all of that? I think what it does for an organization, especially one that's fledgling, that you're trying to give some, you know, you're trying to build, it gives you some stickiness. It gives you some tangibleness to, you know, a corporation is just, it's simple, right? You call up a lawyer, you do it yourself, and you set out some articles of incorporation and register and off you go. I mean, anybody can do it. Practically anybody can do it. So, but what gives that organization some being and some character? Things like value principles help you define what that company means and starts to create its own, you know, its own essence. And I think for me, because we did it so early and set that out in advance, it really helped us make it feel like it was real and like we could all rally around that. And I think, you know, to the firm that maybe didn't do it out of the gate and is, you know, 5, 10, 15 years out and feels like they struggle to get people to sort of line up with how to act and how to carry yourself and get people to build in and around a culture, probably the best place to start is right at its root principles, which is what are you all about? What are your values? And quite frankly, if you don't have common values, if there's partners and there's different people at the executive level and you don't have those common values, if one guy thinks that, you know, we should be doing morally and ethically what's right every time and another person thinks we should be trying to make as much money as we can regardless of what you're doing, then you probably have to reconsider, you know, the fundamental organization and the shareholdings. So
right.
It gives you something to rally around and focus around. If nothing else, it's a process.
Excellent. And last takeaways for anybody listening, any kind of action items that they might want to consider given what you've talked about?
So I think the action item would be, you know, take a look, try to get up on the, you know, the expression, try to get up on the shelf and look down upon the organization and see if there's, you know, if you believe that there's some common values that should be articulated and built upon. And the action item would be, if you think that's an exercise that makes some sense, seek out somebody, an independent third party who can work with you. Maybe it's somebody that does this for a living like we use. Maybe it's somebody that is an experienced consultant who could help guide you through it. But I'd highly recommend that you find somebody to to facilitate that and give it a shot. Yeah, what's the worst that can happen?
Thank you so much, Jason. And for those listening, if anybody's interested to hear more about Spire Capital or contact Jason, you can check him out on his corporate website at www.spirecapital.com. And again, Jason, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today about this.
Well, thanks, everybody, for listening, and I appreciate the time, Christine. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.